Welcome, everyone, to the Global Engagement Insights podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host, and we've got an incredible opportunity today. We're here with Meredith McQuaid. And Meredith, you've not only been an SIO for a number of years, you were actually appointed as the first SIO of the University of Minnesota. You've been the chair of the board and president of NASA. You now consult with a number of different universities. You've got a very large view of what's happening going on in the industry. And what are the changes that need to happen? How do we advocate for ourselves? How do we get the attention of presidents? How do we do all kinds of things that we need to do to function and grow the international education program? So with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the takeaway from today is how you can raise the profile of your university through international education. And that's a pretty big job, pretty big opportunity, but one that is absolutely available. With that, I'd love to have you just maybe expand a little bit more on your background and what you're doing right now, and then we'll jump right into the subject matter.
Sure. Great. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I would say I not only have an unique perspective because I'm old, basically, but I've been in the field a long time and now with this consulting role, but I'm actually a product of international education. So I studied abroad when I was a sophomore in college, and then I've had many opportunities to live and work abroad before I came back, went to law school, and then entered the profession. That combination, my own experience, and then my experience becoming the first SIO at the University of Minnesota, and I was in that role as the SIO for 15 years, just retired last year. That combination, and when I practiced law, I practiced immigration law. So I had a different look at the values and the challenges of internationals, non-US people moving here for a variety of reasons. So that's the combination that I think has made my career so interesting to me and hopefully has allowed me to make somewhat of a difference.
I'm going to encourage people at the end, we're going to ask how they can get a hold of you and ask questions. What I'd love to do is to start out with, in terms of raising the profile of the university through international education, one of the things that you've got to do is you've got to get your university presidents to care. You've got to get noticed. You've got to make a difference. You've got to make change starting with them. Tell us a little bit about your thinking about that and then how you accomplish that.
I think there are people in the field who believe that you actually can't accomplish much without having the highest person on campus engaged, whether that's a president or a chancellor or a provost. I think it's critical to have their support, but I don't necessarily think it's critical for them to be your first cheerleader in order to get the university some traction. Presidents, provosts, chancellors have a lot on their plate. And the idea that they even might be advocates for, say, study abroad for all of their students or for increasing international student enrollment, that's never going to be their highest priority. And if it is, it's one of 8 priorities. For me at the University of Minnesota, one of the ways I think we really did advance our profile, that is the profile of the international education unit, was to build a coalition first of the willing, and then went to recruit those who had been a little bit circumspect, for example. And then when you have that weight behind you, and I mean the weight of faculty, deans, department heads, that group together can persuade the president that this is something that should be a high priority for the university. Just because a university president likes travel or likes the idea of increasing international student enrollment doesn't mean they're necessarily going to listen to everything you advocate for. But if you are among, you being the SIO or anyone in your office, if you are among a large chorus of voices, you're going to get much more attention than if it's just you going once a semester in to see the president to say, hey, what we do really matters. You have to show that it matters. You have to show that it matters to a lot of people before they're actually going to take time away from really more, I would say, more critical in the sense of timeliness or crisis-driven decision-making.
Well, it's a really good one. And you just started to answer my follow-on question, which is that this really matters. And what's the most important thing? Because I love the idea of starting with those that are your built-in champions and then going in the concentric circles outside of that. But when this really matters, what's the most important message that delivers or is behind?
In a way, you have to tailor it to the personality of the person you're speaking to, because there's a lot of ways to talk about the good of international education. I think the message that likely resounds the most effectively is that we change a student experience. And it's not just experience because students study abroad, because that would mean we're talking about our American students. It's not just the experience of the international students who come in, because then we're focused on that narrower group. It's not just the experience of students in a classroom where a faculty member understands the importance of cross-cultural communication. It's all of those. It's the idea that international education isn't an option that's available for some disciplines, for some faculty, for some students. It ought to be a conversation that we are changing the experience of everyone on the campus through experiences, conversations, confrontations, discussions that expand the context beyond domestic. And that's why it's hard to talk about. I once had a conversation with Karen Fisher, who said, every time I go to explain comprehensive internationalization in an article I'm writing, I need three paragraphs. I'm paraphrasing. She may not have said it exactly that way. The point is, we don't have a very good story to tell unless someone's got a good 5-6 minutes at a minimum. But actually, it's more like 15 or 20. Even among ourselves, we will say, wait a minute, when you say that, are you talking about study abroad? And so I think part of it is we don't have a way to promote this succinctly, deeply, because if it's too succinct, it's too shallow. But if we don't even agree on what the terms are, what the goals are, then we're going to have a hard time persuading someone who's the least bit suspicious of what we're talking about.
Believe me, I think you did a YouTube short or an Instagram really well. The bottom line is that it changes the entire student experience. You might be at 6%, you might be at 12% utilization of the international education program throughout the university, but 100% of the students and the faculty.
Yes.
And what would you say is there's perception and reality. If that's the reality with most presidents, chancellors, and provosts, do you think that that is all their perception of the impact of international education?
I would guess if you cold called half of the U.S. university presidents in the country, private, public, and said, what does it mean to internationalize? You might get consensus on study abroad should be more affordable. That's what they understand. That's what their kids do. That's what their nieces and nephews do, because they're in this privileged class of people who probably took their kids abroad when they were little. The students participated in the choir while they were in high school. They went abroad. The people who already get that study abroad is good for people is a very narrow group of people. And because it's still a privileged opportunity. So if you got a university president who knew that much, they would say, yep, we should have study abroad scholarships for everyone. But that is such a narrow piece of this idea that we need to internationalize the entire undergraduate experience, university experience. Graduate students shouldn't be excluded. Those are two different things, but you won't find a number of university presidents. I don't know many university presidents who came to the SIO track. That would be fun to find out. But I think most of them are like, oh yeah, I know you do a good job over there, but get me more international students, because those are the things we count. That's how we measure success or growth. The things we count, it doesn't prove anything. We all know that. Those of us in international education, having more students who study abroad or having more international students doesn't necessarily internationalize the university. It takes work from there to really integrate those experiences across the classroom and the campus.
What's interesting is you're laying out all the different steps that it takes, like the how-to guide to raise the profile of international education and then therefore the profile of the university. And what you just talked about is the challenge. What's the current perceptions? You started out with some of the how, which is you get the champions, the true believers, and those concentric circles out, what the message is that you have to take forward. So here's the last part of the how-to guide. How do you prove that? So you raise some eyebrows. You say, no, it impacts everyone, the entire student experience. What are the proof points, or how do you support that statement, which makes intuitive sense when you explain it, but how do you seed that?
Yeah, and that's what we don't do well. And maybe the answer is we haven't, because we don't know how. If you can actually get a group of donors, I was on the board of the Carlson School of Management, the board of the international board, and they give great scholarships to their students to have an international experience. And they would come in and talk to the board, many of whom were alums, many of whom are big employers in the Twin Cities. And the student would describe what an incredible experience they had on this trip that was funded with a scholarship. And this would then inspire the board members to raise more money so that more students would have this experience. That's a student at a time that's selling this. If you're on the board long enough that you actually had three or four people come in, you do see a pattern. You see it doesn't matter where they came from, doesn't matter where they were born, doesn't matter if they were studying accounting or marketing or finance. The experience was profound. And some of it was profound because of what it taught them about business in France. Some of it was profound on a deep personal level. But in either case, what the board members listened to was, these are turning into the kinds of employees we want as people who run businesses in Minnesota that may or may not have an international side to it, might be purely domestic, but our customers are now more than just Minnesotan. And so we have to have employees who can speak to all of these things. Okay, that's one group of people, and you brought in three or four students to talk to them. You could do it faster. You could have clips. You could show a video. And then you could do it the reverse. You could do the international students who came here, who is just at another event, a fundraiser for young men who had come. These happen to be men who had come in through Zimbabwe. Just wowed this group of donors with their incredible experience coming to the United States as a student. Everybody got out their checkbooks or their credit cards, whatever that is, because that moved them. But that is no way. You cannot base the growth of an international education office on those two things, because all you'd be doing all day is running around showing videos or having students talk. So there's got to be a way whereby the people who aren't in that room are also persuaded that this is a good idea. And I don't know that we've done a good job. I don't know that we can measure how many students were profoundly changed. I think that one of the things we did at the University of Minnesota, we had a program where experts, I'll leave it at that, would sit in classrooms and observe how the faculty engaged or failed to engage the students in their classroom. These were faculty who said, I'm really interested in learning more because as I sit here and I'm teaching, I'm focused on my teaching. I'm not actually picking up the signals of who's dropping out of the conversation. And this particular venture was designed to find ways to be more inclusive of non-traditional students, not only international students, but the non-majority. And what the faculty learned were, it was eye-opening for them. They didn't realize that all of their hypotheticals were intensely American in their references, or that when they had students break up into study groups, they didn't facilitate those. So everybody who looked like people formed study groups with people who looked like them, completely human nature. But if a faculty member isn't persuaded or encouraged to take the time to facilitate those group sessions, that's what's going to happen every time. And what I think really persuaded faculty, many of them just wanted to be better teachers. Many of them, their evaluations changed. The end of the course evaluations were better, higher, after they had redesigned the way they engage with their students. That's really motivating to faculty. People who want to do their jobs well welcome that kind of feedback. And again, we didn't force our way on anyone. These were faculty who said something, I'm not happy with how things are going, or I do this great. Why don't you come in and watch me? And then when they got the feedback, they realized, oh, there's other things I could be doing. But those are separate messages, not just how profound a study abroad experience was for a student at the Carlson School of Management, but how profound it was for an entire group of students to have a faculty member who changed the way they interacted because they were more aware of the cross-cultural communication that makes the group more welcoming or less alienating, perhaps.
Here's what I took away, and this has been consistent on this podcast with other SIOs, other leaders, is that basically advocating and promoting international education internally is about being a good storyteller. And that's great because I'm a trained marketer. And as marketers, we try to tell good stories. People engage and interact and understand stories more than they do bullet points and strategies. And we actually retain stories at a rate of 8 times than if we're just told some stats about international education, things like that. But that does lead to another side of this, because you answered the question on how do you raise the stature of the university through international education by talking about it impacts the total student experience. There's other ways that it impacts the university. And my question is, if storytelling is really important, but there's a lot of good data, and the data tells a story and allows for more important decision-making to happen. But we had a wonderful Charlie Bankert, who's the SIO.
Yeah, I know Charlie well.
Yeah. So he uses the data in the International Education Program to go meet individually with deans and talk to them about their schools and how they can benefit, what they have as an opportunity, when they've taken advantage of those opportunities, how they can take advantage of more, what they can do to forward the goals of their different departments. And it's a very proactive advocacy. And he relies on the data in order to do that. How important is the data, or even having, I guess, what I call like a digital infrastructure in place so that you don't have silos of data and manual entries, but you have control of the data. So therefore, control of more storytelling and advocacy and things like that. How important is that?
Again, it really does depend on who you're speaking to at the university. So on a budget, every year I would go in and make a case for more money in my budget. And the CFO does not want to hear about the life-changing experiences of students. He wants to know why I want more money. And so you have to be able to come at this from all different angles. And the example of Charlie with the deans, I would go annually to each dean and I would show them across the schools why College of Science and Engineering has a lot more international students, but fewer students who study abroad. And do you care, Dean X? The next college, I'd do a different presentation, but always allowing them to see as compared to each other, because that is very motivating. And if you can get the deans to care, even if it is, and I say only, I don't mean merely, even if it's because the numbers matter to them, then you have four or five deans that will go to the president with you and talk about why international education is important. You maybe have a meeting with the president where he says, how much money are the international students bringing in? But that typically is going to be down at the provostial level, at the budgetary level. And I think the SIO has to know in an instant when you walk into a room, this is a group I have to talk about data to. And I've got my data. I'm well prepared for that. Or I've given my data. Nothing seems to be happening here. I'm just going to throw in a few of the stories that I know to be true about the impact we've had on student lives, on faculty experiences. I think being an SIO is really, it probably is true of a million kinds of leaders, but you really have to know how to gauge your audience to tell the story, either from a factual data-driven point or from the more magazine style or individual experience.
And it's first time I ever thought about this, but listening to you is that to be an international education leader, an SIO, you've got to be a really good salesman.
Yeah, constantly selling. Yes.
And you've got people building coalitions. How do you get the attention of the president? You've got a lot of work before you even want to try to get the attention of the president.
A lot of work. Yes. And you really have to, because universities are disparate groups, you have to bring, there's international educator at a big campus like the University of Minnesota, or pick one. There's international educators in almost every one of the colleges. That may not be their full-time job, but one of their jobs is the study abroad advising or international student advising. And those people need to be brought together so they feel strength in numbers. And that is always motivating for people to say, okay, I'm not alone. And maybe next, what can we do together? At the University of Minnesota, in fact, this week, basically our own mini NAFSA across our five campuses. I think it's March 22nd, which is that tomorrow? No, 2 days. So people plan for months. They put in proposal ideas and we are speaking to each other. So the system campuses come in and talk about how they're serving their international students in these somewhat rural areas. We have faculty who come in and talk about a study abroad program they led, what went wrong, what went well. We have poster sessions. And it has built this really large camaraderie of the people who do this work. And then Monday or Tuesday morning, they'll go back to their colleges. They'll feel energized by what is going on system-wide, and they'll talk more. They then promote better within their unit or their college or whatever. And then that becomes known more at their college. It's just a constant sort of maintenance or tending of the idea that international education should be connected across the system. I always say across horizontally and then vertically from the smallest to the largest in terms of the hierarchy of a university. So it's never over. I don't know that we'd ever know when we've accomplished comprehensive internationalization, but this idea that more people appreciate what it is we're talking about is how we're going to change the dynamics of a campus.
The last part of this how-to guide that you're laying out here is you've got to define and then you've got to garner resources. I love everything we've been talking about, but if you don't have the funding, you don't have the staffing, you're not executing, nothing's happening. How do we define and garner these resources that we need?
If you're in a place, a small college, a medium college, a huge university, where you have made your case in any number of ways, you have tried for the past 2 years to get yourself heard, and your budget is still going to be cut, or they're eliminating the SIO position, that still goes on. They move study abroad into student affairs. They move international students just right over to admissions. This dismantling goes on. And at other campuses, they're growing it. They're creating an SIO for the first time. So your own unique situation may not have anything to do with the fact that you've been promoting and talking about it and told your story. If you have a president who comes in and says, yep, but I got choices to make and you're not one of them, then you either have to, what I always say is you can't give up. If we believe in what we do and you just do it on a smaller scale, and then you maybe are reduced in how you build your coalition of the willing, but there is no magic solution to working for a administration that sees no value in what you're doing. That's true for libraries or sports, or different presidents have different goals and they say this year, no. And so if the opportunity to even ask for more resources doesn't exist, then you have to make your peace with what you can get done. You promote it the best way you can. Websites are great. There's still things you can do. But if you're at a place where there are resources and you just have to argue for them, that's when I think this idea that you have to have a team of people that aren't international educators. You have to have the scientists. You have to have the lab people. You have to have the librarians. You have to have other people who will speak positively for what this does in general for a university atmosphere or the way we educate our students, that this is a necessary piece of it. And it's not just the SIO that keeps talking about it.
What you've laid out here very clearly sounds like it's the job for three SIOs to do, the amount of time that it would take.
Yes.
When you speak with SIOs and you recommend, obviously, how they're structuring their programs, but their time and what they can be doing, how do you tell them, here's how you can get all this accomplished?
I'd probably just say, here's how you might get all of this accomplished. This is a field that requires people with a passion. Unless you're a one-person office and have nobody, you've got somebody. And you really have to empower your deputies or your lieutenants, whatever you want to call them, to speak passionately and proactively every chance they get. And then you have to reward them for that. I just had, you're still there at the University of Minnesota, people who ran the International Student Office and the Learning Abroad Center and the China Center and the Internationalizing the Campus. You just have to empower people. I know it would be great if it could always be through raises, but it can be done in a lot of ways. And you have to just allow them to also represent the unit. So I think this idea that only the SIO can speak about this will wear people out, and it's wrong. And so you can't be everywhere all the time, the SIO. So promoting and acknowledging and supporting the people who are on the front lines, and even the front lines in front of those lines, the ones who are the student advisors, appreciating people, giving out shout outs at a staff meeting, giving some kind of award that doesn't come with money, but it comes with recognition, a personal day off if you do such and such. We used to, at the University of Minnesota, people could give, we called him cupcakes. This is what Steve did yesterday for me at this meeting, and I just want to recognize him. It really doesn't take much for people to feel appreciated. And then, of course, that just promotes the idea that we're in this together and that it's not only and probably never just the SIO that's out there to promote this work.
You're right. The power of recognition, because most people in international education are not necessarily in it for the money.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who's in it for the money.
You're in it because of the belief of what it, the impact that it makes.
Yeah.
And that brings me full circle back to the title of this episode was, how do you raise the profile of the university? We've talked a lot about how we raise the profile of international education. Connect that dot for us, please, in terms of how that raises the profile of the university itself.
I think it could be done right now. There are universities that will, on their home page of their website, will have a story about an international alum, for example. And so the idea is that universities, public education's under fire now, it's something many university presidents are talking about. And so it's this idea that how do we promote that we're actually in this for the good of the many and not just the few? And it is about how do you make the Midwest, for example, a more welcoming environment for people who weren't necessarily born here. And so this just cross-cultural understanding, I think this question of equity, diversity is also being challenged. But it still points up the fact that colleges and universities provide unique experiences and opportunities to everyone on campus, whether they're part-time, whether they're adult learners, whether they're living on campus. All of that is a microcosm of a society. And the idea that you can provide experiences where people understand each other better, where you learn more than just a second language, you learn about cross-cultural behavior that will impact the opportunities you have when you become a professional in whatever field. This is such a long way to explain it because we don't necessarily do it. We haven't convinced those who are even doing the marketing that this idea that you enter University X this way and you exit it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years later, and you're a different person because not only of what you learned in the classroom, but what you learned in the environment. And so it's certainly not an easy answer to say international education will make universities a better place, because the answer is, what do you mean when you say that? And then we get into these long discussions. But like many aspects of a college or university setting, the idea is to create experiences. That's why the online stuff, that pure COVID, everybody stays home, everybody works so hard to figure out ways to provide meaning to those virtual classrooms, because there are very few substitutes for sitting down next to somebody who comes from a different place, physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever, and engaging in meaningful experiences, whether that's a conversation or a joint project. So it's not an easy question. And I think it's why a lot of university presidents are curious about it, but they don't put it into their talking points because they don't really know where it goes from here, if that makes sense.
It does. And as a compilation of things that I've been hearing across all of these podcasts is that we live in one world. We're a global economy. We're going to be more and more a global workforce. Both exist, but because of technologies, borders are coming down. And even the melding of cultures across countries, we are becoming globalized. And if we're not prepared for that and we don't appreciate that, we can't communicate across, then we're not equipping as universities students to go out and be a part of this brave new world. I do have one more thing in terms of raising the stature of the university, helping universities address one of the biggest concerns around right now is their very viability, especially in light of their enrollment decline or the enrollment cliff that's coming up, constant decline that's happening. And if I had to do this on a scale of 1 to 10 and have you put a line in the sand, how important is international education in addressing the enrollment cliff, the enrollment decline? 1, it's not important at all. 10, it's vitally important to addressing the enrollment decline and helping universities actually grow, because without the resources of the university and themselves and the vitality of the university, where does that leave the international education program as well? Where do you put it on that 1 to 10 scale?
It's important because bodies are important. On that really narrow, how do we get more people sitting in classrooms at a university? You can do it through transfer students. You can go to a market that is untapped, go to Texas, try to get those students to come north. But I don't think that's part of international education. That's a business thing. How do I get more students to come here? If it happens that we don't have as many as we'll ever need within the borders of the U.S., then the answer is go outside of the U.S. But that is an international education to me. That's a business decision. All these predictions about the enrollment cliff are true, then everybody should be out recruiting international students if what they want to do is fill their seats. Then, by the way, we're all chasing the same group, because not every student outside of the U.S. wants to come to the U.S. So now you've got even a smaller pool, and now you've got all the big universities all fishing in that same pond for people who will enroll at their universities. That's a very practical solution to a problem, but it is not international education to me, unless you have some plan for when they arrive here for them to actually engage in meaningful ways. But sure, finding new students to meet the looming cliff, I'm sure it's probably about a 6 to most presidents, because if you don't have tuition, you can't pay the bills. But I don't think it's part of international education unless there's another question or 5 more questions.
Got it. So we have talked about a lot. And if there was one main takeaway that you wanted people to have from this podcast, what would it be?
I really feel like we have to be able to describe what we do in a way that is appreciated by people who don't already know it. There's a lot of people who get what we mean by cross-cultural understanding or an international experience. But there's so many more who hear that and say, okay, but why and so what? And I had one of those cross-cultural experiences and it was awful. So I think that we just talk to each other all the time about why it matters, the huge difference it's made in our own lives and other people's lives, and why it's just too bad that other people don't get it. That's what we talk about. We've all had amazing experiences. We've all seen the positive impact international education can have. But the idea is to get that better known within the academy, within the layers of bureaucracy that run these universities when there's a lot of other competing interests. And I think we could do it as a field. Everyone's very busy doing their day-to-day work or arguing for their budget. I think we have more work to do. If we really want university presidents to get hired as their first year presidential position, and one of their priorities is internationalizing the university. I don't know of any president that comes in with that on the agenda.
That makes perfect sense. And if people did have follow-up questions, would it be appropriate to give them a link to your profile on, say, LinkedIn to get a hold of you? Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming and sharing all these insights and laying out the different stages of the how-to guide to raise the stature and profile of international education and therefore the university in total. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the hard questions.